Hi, my name is Mitch Dunford with the National Alliance. Welcome to part two of this NAT Alliance Now COVID-19 Conversations podcast. It's a continuation of part one, which is about the issues related to the pandemic, business interruption, and business income. So without any further delay, let's jump right into the conversation between Paul Martin and Paul Burkett.
Let's talk about some areas where agents don't need to go. There are going to be some legal issues that come up, and help them understand where they need to be a little bit careful as these things are being sorted out.
I agree with you, Paul, on that one. The element is these are standardized coverage forms. Okay, we have our bias and our prejudice about it. We can't allow that to come to the forefront. We just have to say the coverage form speaks for itself. We'll send the claim in and let that be interpreted by the insurance company. Now, if you have happened to have sold a coverage form that had business interruption as the language, you still don't make any interpretation of that. You just send it off to the carrier and let them handle that. Now, your business interruption may be some specialized forms that you've gotten from others. But if we're dealing with the standardized coverage forms, such as the ISO, the AIS, and the MSO coverage forms, they have had a common interpretation of the SARS exposure from 2006, and they have filed and put mandatory that a communicable disease exclusion and or a virus exclusion would be on their policies. So the element of saying, wait a minute, we've had this as a special type of coverage exclusion for ages and been out there since SARS. Why are we going to try to override something there? We should not get involved in that. Let the coverage form with all the endorsements speak for themselves as we go into that. Now, we do know that there are some special event coverage forms out there. There's some force majeure coverage forms that are out there. And some of these forms have pandemic coverage to it. But again, even in those type of specialty forms, if you put event coverage in that together, do not interpret, do not get involved in that. Don't answer questions, just say, we're gonna send it off onto that. The healthcare industry really is one of the bigger areas where we've seen some specialized pollution coverage put on the healthcare industry. And some of that pollution coverage in the healthcare injury has definitions that include fungus, mold, viruses, and any microbiological hazard material is included in that. And that one may have some coverage, but you don't want to make that interpretation. You just simply say, we'll send it to the carrier and let them make that evaluation as they go into it. So you're going to hear some pockets where coverage may exist, and that's fine, because they did something about that. The healthcare industry was one of the leading edges on the pollution side of this in terms of the microbiological agents, and that came from the Ebola scare and the SARS. So I would not be surprised to see some coverage for business income being paid to the healthcare industry. But we can make that determination. If you've got a healthcare client and who's you need to send it in and let the insurance company make that determination. That's going to be the big item that we look into that. Other items that we have to look at is going back to the definitions. The definitions as we got it, it's pretty interesting. Under the ISO form, it's business income is defined as net income plus continuing expenses. And continuing expenses includes payroll. Okay, fine. That's what it is. Can you meet that threshold? What's the definition of rental value? There's some forms out there that are gray gross earnings forms. There's trade disruption forms out there. What do they say? Period of restoration, what's that? What is that extent? What is the trigger for it? What is extended business income? What's the contingent business income or dependent property in the civil authority? And all of those create triggers and questions that you're going to get, but you don't answer them. You just commonly say, yeah, that's what the definition is. We'll send it to the adjuster and let them understand what's taking place on that. The problem here is we get tied up in our idea of service and value-added service. And when we get tied up on that, we have this tendency to want to explain things. And we're going to go, nah, we can't go there with this, because this is one of those that has a ripple effect so quickly back upon us that we got to be just silent and say, hey, you know, I'm going to follow my requirements under my agency contract, and I'll send that right to the insurance company or my wholesaler brokerage contract. I'll send it to there and we'll adhere to the conditions in the policy. Do not at any time say, well, don't send it in. Never say that. Always say, we'll send it in. We'll always send it in. Never say that word, we won't send it in. Always say you're going to want to send it in on that.
Good deal. Good advice. Okay. Let's begin to move into what really makes it covered or not. And when it comes to business income, let's get everybody equipped again as these arguments and lawsuits begin to fly around. You've outlined the areas that'd be under examination. What is it really that would make it covered or not?
Well, all of the insurance contracts have what's called a condition precedent, which establishes certain elements have to be in place before you can trigger coverage. One of the big ones on the standardized coverage forms is you have to have direct physical loss. And so that means the property, the scheduled location, where it's at has to have a direct physical loss. And when you look at that coverage, it depends on the phrasing and the historical view over the years by the courts, what's a physical loss requirement. So the purpose behind the requirement is to tell us that there have to be some external factors that create this. We call them the causes of loss. But other items such as bad weather, economic downturn, change in consumer trends do not fit what we call the definite physical damage issues that we get under the cause of loss. So we have to have a distinct, demonstrable physical alteration to the property caused by the event. The key word here is demonstrable physical alteration to the property. So the conventional answer to loss of coverage is no, there is no coverage. The legal perspective is everybody's going to argue, well, maybe there is, and it's the back to the reasonable expectation. What is an important question is, covered damage to property is the trigger for business income, and there must be a covered cause of loss without an exclusion in the policy, otherwise the coverage would be denied. The physical loss requirement is very, very important, and it includes the physical loss requirement for the civil authority, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. But you have to demonstrate, the insured has to demonstrate actual physical loss to the insured property. And additionally, the fear of the possibility does not constitute physical loss. The fear of, well, you could be a contaminated restaurant doesn't apply. The people didn't show up because they had a fear that it was contaminated. You have to prove that you had the actual physical loss to the insured property. That's how the coverage forms read. And so physical damage or loss remains the predicate, remains the condition precedent for all of that. And that's the hurdle that plaintiff's bar has to go over. And the dictionary definition of physical is that it's distinct, demonstrable physical damage or alteration to that physical structure. Now, what we've learned about the virus? The virus may stay on surfaces, but it doesn't alter the surfaces. The virus doesn't have a long-term life. Some have said that it may stay on the surface between 12 to 14 days. Others say less. If you have ultraviolet light, it goes into that. So you're now starting to say, okay, what was the physical damage? Can you prove physical damage to that? Now, there have been some case laws that have talked about that, and some courts have interpreted a physical loss or damage requirement can be demonstrated by other items, and that where they go in and say it impacted the functionality or the reliability of the enterprise. And therefore, because of that, we may be able to grant coverage. And what we've found over time is we've had some coverages, but each of them have a specific element to that. The AIG versus Superior Court. Contamination of the environment satisfies the requirement of the property damage. What they had is physical damage. They could actually see the material on parts of the building. Therefore, the court came back and said that was contamination. Therefore, it was required for property damage. Now, remember, a lot of coverage forms have a contamination exclusion on them, so there may be no coverage. The Motorist Mutual one, this was a situation where we had a well on the property was contaminated with E. coli bacteria, creating the uninhabitable aspect of the property. The court there said, yeah, there was physical damage. There was E. coli that was demonstrable that was in the well. in the Oregon Shakespeare Festival versus Great American, they canceled the festival because of potential or actual forest fire smoke. It was infiltrating all around it, and it was hard for people to breathe. And they said, yeah, that was demonstrable, physical, uninhabitable area created by that fire and smoke. And they said that was property damage. And then the other one that everybody alludes to, and this is what the plaintiff's bar is going to argue, is these four, is the Gregory Packaging versus Travelers Property. And this is the accidental release of ammonia into a packaging facility that caused the facility to shut down, and the court ruled there was physical damage to trigger the business income. Okay. But you have here, you could demonstrate, you can prove that it's there. Our problem right now with this virus, can you prove it was there? Can you prove you had the virus anywhere in your property, that it was physically damaged by that? And what you're going to have is people saying, no, I can't prove that. And you're going to find in the case of the French Laundry versus Hartford Insurance Company, they're saying that the French Laundry admits we can't prove there was any physical damage to our property by the virus. However, the civil authority argument comes into that. So what you're going to have is you got to get over a hurdle. You got to get over a significant hurdle on the terms of the physical damage to the property as you go into it. So what you have to prove is that the air conditioning system was damaged, or the heating system was damaged, but there was some verifiable item that shows that it existed and caused that in the ductwork, and we had to do special cleaning. So court decisions over the years have said, yes, if the insured can demonstrate the existence of the hazardous substance within the airspace of a building, it may be covered. Now, most of these decisions came from the areas of asbestosis and asbestos fibers in the airspace. And they said, yeah, ABM material is going to be considered a demonstrable hazardous substance, and therefore will do it. There have been a couple of cases about odors in a building within the airspace, and they said, yeah, that's a physical harm. But the evidence still has to show that a contamination created the physical damage to the tangible property. And that's the hurdle that has to be overcome. And there's going to be a lot of money spent going through the court to try to define that issue. And a lot of your clients are going to be disappointed because they have this reasonable expectation. What obviously was there, that's why it had to shut down. No, your barbershop didn't have to shut down because of that. It was done by a different entity, public safety, and public safety is not an element of covered peril, cause of loss. So what we know under the standardized forms, both the ISO and the AIS, since 2006, we've seen a lot of exclusions showing up on the coverage forms in the standard. Communicable disease exclusion of the virus or bacteria exclusions have shown up. They've shown up on the business owner's policy, capital asset policies, business auto forms, general liability forms, commercial flood policies, umbrella forms, commercial property forms, farm forms, home health care, homeowners policies, and even other certain market segments and specialty coverages like restaurants and such not. So we've seen the exclusion showing up that have been growing since 2006 to limit the catastrophic exposure that the insurance company says I can't get enough money for. And so since 2006, the ISO has had the CP0140, the 0706 version, which basically says we will not pay for loss or damage caused by or resulting from any virus, bacterium, or other microorganism capable of inducing physical stress, distress, illness, or disease. And the business, this exclusion even goes on to specifically say it applies to business income. So if you've got a form that has this exclusion on it, and your client says, I want to file the claim, you say, fine, we'll file the claim. Don't say anything about it. But the insurance company is going to assert this if that exclusion is on there, on that. And the other item that's going to take place is a question about, well, are we going to call it a virus? Are we going to call it SARS? Well, you call it COVID-19, or we're going to call it SARS-CoV-2. It doesn't matter on the language. The issue is the virus. And that's going to be the argument from the insurance company. And it says there was no trigger of loss onto the property, caused physical damage to the property on that. Then you throw in the pollution exclusions, and the pollution exclusions require several items, and they may exclude fungus, mold, bacteria, viruses, communicable diseases can be put on all of that. So all of these are throwing in into the element on that. And then I'll throw in the ordinance of law, and the ordinance of law says you've got to have a law or a rule that denies certain types of coverage. And we have that as a concurrent causation exclusion. And if you don't have ordinance or law coverage endorsement on that, somebody says, well, the health department said, I got to do this, therefore it's covered. And you go, but you've got an ordinance or law exclusion. You can see that the exclusions are going to bang up and start to limit the coverage for our clients in terms of that. Then you have like the business owners policies that have this exclusion about loss due to virus or bacteria, which is saying, wait a minute, if I've got that, unless you've got the food contamination endorsement on, then it may provide coverage for that. So then all of a sudden you're saying, wait a minute, I'm not going to get my business income loss of actual loss sustained for 12 months because I have a virus exclusion because I can't prove that I have physical damage to the property. Then you have the ISO business owner policy for loss due to virus or bacteria. It says exclusion of fungus, wet rot, dry rot, and bacteria, and also in terms of that. And so now people say, well, bacteria is not a virus. Okay. That could be a possibility of some argument. And then you've got the communicable disease exclusion that throws on to the BOPs. And this basically says, hey, we're not going to cover anything about the communicable disease and including the hiring, testing, failure to prevent the disease or failure to report the disease. Then you've got other virus and bacteria changes that are coming out. For example, under the AIS form, they say loss of income has to be to tangible property. And if it's from a virus, it's loss on that. See, the AIS used to have an endorsement, but now they incorporate it in their causes of loss. And the causes of loss specifically say that they're not going to cover the virus and the bacteria. Therefore, they're not going to cover any of the business income. And then you have carriers like Factory Mutual that have a contamination exclusion. And the contamination means the actual or suspected presence of any material that can cause threatened damage to human or human welfare, or that can cause or threaten damage, deterioration, loss of value, loss of marketability, or loss of use of property. And you start to go, wait a minute, a contaminant, foreign substance, impurity, a virus. Wow, no coverage under a very specialized coverage form for large counts called contamination. And so again, it gets back to, well, some forms may have a contamination cleanup coverage, but the contamination cleanup may not include virus. But again, you're back to having to prove that we had physical damage to tangible property caused by an item that you go into that. So what are the virus exclusion impacts? We'll probably agree that most businesses have not shut down because of normal operations, because of an actual known or established presence of the virus. Even if the presence of the virus is on the property somehow deemed to qualify as direct physical loss, very few businesses will be able to provide evidence of the existence on their property. In the absence of that evidence, insured businesses will have to argue that the mere possibility of the presence of the coronavirus on their cover qualifies as direct physical loss. Looking at the plain and ordinary understanding of the language, it's hard to justify that exclusion. And that's where that reasonable expectation and reality meet. And reality says there won't be any coverage in terms of that from an impact standpoint. So again, it goes back to you've got a causal loss hurdle, and the virus, the bacterium, the biological contaminant, or any other microorganism, communicable disease, pollution exclusion, or contamination exclusion is going to take it away. And the plaintiff's bar has to find a way to overcome this to try to trigger business income and business interruption for the clients. And that gets back to the physical injury situation. And a lot of business interruption forms have physical injury as a requirement. All business income forms, standardized forms, have that physical injury requirement. So that's the threshold that has to be taken out of that. The AIS form and the MSO form says it has to be an actual loss sustained due to suspension, defined in terms on the coverage form during the period of restoration due to direct physical loss, the condition precedent caused by a covered cause of loss. Those are the five items that you have to have to trigger the standardized coverage form ISO, AEIS, and MSO business income extra expense time element coverage forms. So you have to prove an actual loss sustained. Most will be able to prove that. Suspension, yeah, most can say I haven't been open. What did you do during the period of restoration? Well, I didn't have any damage. So did you restore anything? What were you doing? Well, you didn't have direct physical damage, so you didn't restore anything. So your business suspension was not by a covered cause of loss. You can see three out of the five real quickly, throw it out as part of the overall thought process as you start to look at the business income. And again, we go back to the language. We will pay for the actual loss of business income you sustain to the necessary suspension of your operations. During a period of restoration, the suspension must be caused by a direct physical loss of or damage to property at the premises, which are described in the declarations. All these defined terms are going to have to be elements that are roadblocks in terms of saying there is no coverage in that. So the argument that we're going to see against coverage is that there is no direct physical loss. There is no restoration. There is no covered cause of loss. Notice that the three out of the five. Also, we then overlay the exclusions, pollutants, contaminants, consequential loss. And so again, these all overlay and tell us very quickly that there's going to be a battle with the insurance company, and we don't want to be in the middle of it. And we don't want to be in the middle of it because we cannot afford it from our E&O standpoint. Damage or loss occurred. You got to talk about us. Tell me, did you repair or replace the property? What did you do? Disinfectant. Oh, okay, you disinfect. But is that damage? Well, you were had to disinfect because that was a requirement of the public health side of it. Because they don't know whether you had it in there. So disinfection is not a covered cause of loss. Therefore, there's no physical damage. Okay, period of restoration. Notice it says restoration. What does that mean? What did you have to do to restore yourself? You were just shut down because of civil authority. You weren't allowed to. What did you do during that restoration? What efforts did you make to restore your item? Did you try to reopen your hair salon prior to being allowed to by the state authorities? What did you do for the restoration? So what does that mean? And then, of course, the covered cause of loss. What are the perils? What it was the covered peril that you have with it. And you can see the arguments and the elements that are going to come to the forefront of this thing. And so then we get into the covered cause of loss. What kind of form did you have? Did you have a named peril, basic, named peril, broad? Or did you have the special cause of loss where you have all direct physical loss for except for what we exclude or we limit? So then you go in and say, whoa, okay. Well, there's an exclusion in the absolute exclusions, a concurrent causation called the governmental action. And it says seizure or destruction of property by order of the governmental authority is excluded. But we will pay for loss of damage caused by or resulting from accident or destruction ordered by the governmental authority and taken as the time of a fire to prevent its spread if the fire would be covered under this. So the only peril we've got, I've not heard anybody set a pandemic fire or a large arson fire take place, take out the businesses. Now, civil authority, my business was shut down. I was not there. And during that period of time, and then a fire took it out, maybe there will be some coverage on that. There'll be some civil authority, but we've not heard a lot of arson fire and arson items onto that. This exclusion of governmental action, concurrent causation does impact the civil authority coverage, and the civil authority coverage really gets us into a lot of additional questions. Another problem we're going to have is the addition date. What addition date was the coverage form under? What was the impact? What did they have? And if there's a business income coverage, if a governmental authority requires business to close, there is no business income coverage. There is no extra expense. See, before the business income responds, you've got to remember, you've got to come back and say the business is stopped because it was contaminated by that. Nobody can prove that. Now, the requirement to business income dependent property into the supply chain still requires the same item. Was there physical damage to that item? And then you overlay the civil authority coverage, which says, okay, on the business income, you've got anywhere between a 24 to 72 hour time delay for business income and continuing operating expenses. And then the ISO revised its civil authority coverage and says not more than 1 mile from the damage location. Well, wait a minute. We've closed the entire town of San Francisco down. Where's your 1 mile? Where does it apply? How do you get that? And then you start saying to yourself, okay, where was the physical damage within that area? And then AIAS and MSO forms do not have the 1 mile requirement, but they have other variations that goes into that. So coverage for mandatory evacuations, mass transit, suspensions, airport closures, that was considered action of civil authority, and that was granted by the courts. And that came out through Assurance Company of America versus BB Service. But from this decision, there is an argument that civil authority can prohibit access to the covered property, but the other property has to be dealt with in terms of some physical damage. Now, the new argument that's coming out, and this is coming out of the French Laundry versus Hartford Insurance Company, is that the public space was damaged. People would not come because they were denied access to the public space. And the argument in this one is that there was no physical damage to our property, but the general area, cities and around the world, the virus physically infects on the surfaces of objects and materials for an extended period of time. As such, the stay-at-home orders recognize the potential infection of immediate area and public space around the restaurants, therefore triggering the civil authority. There's a lot of disinformation on both sides of this one. This one's one of those, what I'll call, unique kind of arguments about how to trigger civil authority. And I'm not sure that the courts will buy off on this one. And Hartford has already denied the coverage, and that's why they're going through on that basis for that. So what you have under the civil authority is we have another issue. How long is the civil authority coverage? In our standardized forms, ISO, it's only 4 weeks. 2 weeks under the AIS forms and 2 weeks on the MSO form. So even if they get to that argument and trigger the civil authority, they're only going to get so much time, 4 weeks, 2 weeks. And so people have been out more than 4 weeks, more than 2 weeks. And so you sit here and say, it doesn't go into. So you're going to see there's some real significant questions that maybe the barking up this tree is saying there's coverage under business income will not be the best solution. And the best use of your money for a business enterprise, you probably want to be getting the governmental money under the CARES program, the PPR, and other sources to go through and get the money to continue your operation. And on top of that, if you've got a dependent property issue, remember the same issue that we just talked about for the client's location, you have to have the covered peril and you have to have the physical damage at that location. And you may have a virus, bacterium, or microorganism exclusion. And then the coverage territory of the policy for the dependent property, because you may have to have dependent property foreign and dependent property domestic. And if you don't have those endorsements, there will be no coverage for that. So what we know about dependent property forms in the standardized item is coverage territory, perils, coverage, the precedent issues of you have to prove damage to the property all take place in regards to the business triggers for the business income and extra expense in those standardized coverage forms. Our friends at the ISO didn't do us a favor, however. The ISO came out with a form. The AIS is doing the same thing. It hasn't have a form number yet. It's called Business Interruption Limited Coverage for Certain Civil Authority Orders Related to. And this, again, is civil authority, some modification, but the modification is a sublimit, and it's going to be a modification of a certain amount of time. And includes orders restricting some modes of public transportation. There is no addition number. There is no form number at this point in time, and they haven't been filed with the states that are going to require form and file approval. So it doesn't exist, but they're coming out with something. But again, it's very limited type coverage. This is a portent of what we will see in the future. We will see some attempt to provide some type of coverage. But again, the insurance company gets to get a premium and they know what their limitations are going to be for that. So remember, you got to have direct damage by apparel. Has to be in the described territory. The damage has to be caused by a covered cause of loss to trigger net income before tax plus continuing operating expenses plus the extra expense during the period of restoration. And you have to have a period of restoration. And all of the business income extra expense cause a loss form, exclusions and limitations and endorsements may take away coverage on dwell of that back to the communicable disease, virus, bacteria, pollution exclusion, and maybe even the ordinance or law exclusion coming to the forefront. And remember that the civil authority must be result of the covered loss to get the business income. And again, the same criteria applies to the dependent property. So our world of coverage has got a lot stacked against our clients, because that's the way the coverage form was set up to deal with. Here's how we can have adequate rate for the peril or the risk exposure that's out there. And again, bottom line, the exclusionary endorsements is a heavy hurdle. And then reinsurance treaties are going to be modified, and they're not going to support the plaintiff's bar arguments as well. And the other side of that is if they get into the insurance company, the reinsurance treaty may not provide coverage, and that'll impact the solvency of that insurance company. And that's why they're going to fight this in all aspects as we start to look at into it. Same element of discussion that you're going to see on terms of the business income form on the business owners, the actual loss sustained to business, the same elements that we just talked about under the standardized coverage forms are going to apply to the business income. And there is a virus exclusion in the BOP, and practically every carrier has that. Now, whether it got put on automatically or not, that becomes another issue on that. And we do know that civil authority is under the same argument in the theory under the BOP form. And again, the civil authority has the same issue of direct physical damage to the property that is provable, and there has to be a restoration that takes place. So what does that mean to us? Well, it's interesting. We've got some lawsuits that have already been filed. This one's an interesting one. This is Oceana Grill in New Orleans, and it's against Lloyd's of London. I will tell you right off the top that this one is a business interruption loss, not a business income loss. So it's not our standardized coverage forms. This one will be a very interesting argument, because that form did have a exclusion for pandemic, well, I'll just say for virus on it, and we'll have to just track what takes place in that kind of a lawsuit. We know that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court declined to exercise jurisdiction over the COVID-19 insurance coverage litigations and said it's got to be handled on a case-by-case basis. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court says we're not going to allow this to be a class action because each contract is different. Each one has to be interpreted. Each one has to be looked at. What's the cause of loss, the unique circumstances, the perils that were excluded, what were the endorsements? And they said, we can't grant anything that's going to be on a class action lawsuit. And this was coming from a conglomerate of restaurant owners that were trying to seek coverage based on that and trying to go around the process of the declaratory action and go at it on a quick basis. We know that there's going to be other items that are going to trigger elements on that. The recent motion to dismiss filed by Primetime Sports Grill versus Primetime Sports Bar and a certain underwriters of Lloyd. In this case, the policyholder restaurant is seeking judicial declaration that the insurer must cover an alleged loss of business income under the commercial property form. The policy argues that two orders issued by the governor of Florida cause it to suspend its restaurant bar operations. The policy at issue requires that the loss of business income must be caused by direct physical loss of or damage to property at the insurer's property. So the Lloyd's underwriters and their legal counsel are arguing the policyholder failed to allege facts showing direct physical loss. They point out that the policyholder's allegations that the Florida governor ordered the restaurant to close for 30 days, even if true, does not meet the direct physical loss requirement. And the insurer goes on to argue that any amendment of the allegations is futile because there is no alternative basis for coverage to the orders for the COVID-19 pandemic. Therefore, Lloyd's of London anticipates that the policyholder will argue that the pandemic has rendered the insured property uninhabitable and thus legally considered to have sustained a physical loss. However, the insurer will counter this theory by arguing that actually encouraged restaurants like the policyholder remain open to provide delivery, carry out, or curbside service. Furthermore, it asserts that the physical loss is only found to an uninhabitable property where uninhabitability is caused by a physical characteristic of the property, not by an external condition that merely prevents access to the building. That's the public space counterargument. And even if COVID-19 was found at the insured property, the insurer argues that the building would require at most extra caution, cleaning, or sanitation to resolve the problem, and that is not a trigger for business income. So the insurer will argue that the civil authority coverage requires physical damage to the property. And even though the policyholder does have government order limiting access to a premise, there is no physical damage to the neighboring properties within 1 mile as required for the coverage. Therefore, in the primetime case, the insurer specifically will argue that there was no economic side effect of the reduced sales stemming from Florida governor issuing that safer at home, and there was no physical injury. Therefore, there is no coverage that's going to be under the Lloyd's of London form. So you're going to see these kind of arguments coming out more and more, and that'll be part of the noise that you're going to hear working through all of this. And defense counsel anticipates insurers are going to file very similar motions in cases like this all across all jurisdictions. And while each COVID-19 case will present rulings that are unique, that'll help shape the growing body of legal authority, it's going to go back and also look at the legal authority established under the SARS losses that were done in 2006. And they're going to look at even the ones back to the H1N1 virus and to the swine flu, and as well as the avian flu, as examples of looking at what will come out of that. So that's a lot of stuff that you got hit with today. And in ordinary, What do you think, Paul?
I think you did a wonderful job surveying the coverage issues, the legal issues, the doctrines that'll be at challenge, that kind of thing. Did a wonderful job. And before we go with you, sum up for us what is coming and what do you really think professionals in the industry need to keep in mind as this whole thing moves forward?
Well, I think what we're going to see is you're going to see some backstop come out of it. I think the federal government is going to come in with some kind of a backstop, a reinsurance thing. So we're going to have something similar to terrorism. So we're going to have a world of terrorism endorsements and pandemic endorsements. I sense we'll probably get to that level. We're going to see a lot of claims and lawsuits going against commercial property carriers about the business income. And I see a lot of the insurance companies winning on that. That's what I sort of see in my crystal ball, because you can't prove and get beyond the element that it was not ambiguous. It was not, right. You know, it was pretty clear and concise. So I see that. I see the state legislatures having to back off once they figure out that it's unconstitutional what they were trying to do, interfere with the right of private contract. And that has been a very protected item from the original Constitution. So I think they're going to find themselves in that, and especially this whole retroactive coverage concept. The last time retroactive coverage was provided was for the MGM fire. And that was a liability increase. And I remember that because I was involved in it. So I know a little bit about that one. And so I think the best solution for clients right now is to take advantage of the CARES Act, take care of the business employee continuity and recovery funds that are available, look at any kind of grants and funding type issues. And those are going to be the things I think we're going to see here in the near future, very shortly coming out of this. That's reasonable, prudent business approach, and it keeps a solvent insurance companies in business to do what they're supposed to do. Take predictable risk and find ways to pay for it. I think that's where we're going to be in the future.
That's a great, great summary. Thank you for that. And want to encourage you, agents, again, work with your staff, develop procedures, make sure everybody's handling things the right way in the same way, so that we don't have a rash of E&O claims coming back on the agencies. We certainly don't want that. Well, Paul Burkett, thank you again for your time today, for giving us this wonderful survey of the COVID-19 environment. And we hope you'll do it again if things change. And thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you. Take care.
That's it for another episode of NAT Alliance Now. We will be continuing our series of COVID-19 conversations, sites, and insights podcasts throughout this difficult time. It is our goal to help everyone stay informed as our businesses and our industry respond to the pandemic. For more episodes and other resources, visit our website at scic.com. I'm Mitch Dunford, and from everyone at the National Alliance, thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I hope you'll join us next time on NAT Alliance Now.